Hello, and welcome to the Service Contractors Business Tape of the Month. This monthly cassette tape series represents yet another step in accomplishing Grandy & Associates' vision of helping the service contractor come to a place of maturity and profitability. Each month, a different national speaker from throughout the service and trades industry will share dozens of cost-reducing, profit-increasing ideas to help you become a more profitable company. This month's tape is entitled Seven Steps to Building Winning Employee Teams and is presented by Bernie Leibowitz. Dr. Leibowitz is the founder and president of Leibowitz & Associates, based out of Chicago, Illinois, and has over 25 years' experience in consulting with top management throughout the service and trades industry. He is a nationally recognized consultant in business management, dealing with issues such as quality improvement, team building, management development, succession planning, and strategies for growth and change. During today's tape, Dr. Leibowitz will be sharing several specific steps you can take to build a winning employee team.
Seven steps to building winning employee teams. Who doesn't believe in employees working together as a team? Who doesn't believe that our work should be as quality-oriented as we can make it? Who doesn't want employees to take the initiative when problems arise? And who doesn't want employees to work as hard and as efficiently as they can? If we were in the same room together, I doubt whether I'd see any hands raised. Now, let's look at the other side of things. Who here is satisfied with the productivity of their employees and doesn't care whether they are any more productive than they are now? Who here is satisfied with how well their employees work together as a team, helping each other, making up for mistakes fellow employees make, and so forth? And who feels that the quality of work that their employees do is as good as it can be? And again, if we were in the same room together, I doubt whether I'd see very many hands raised. Have you thought why, despite your wanting efficiency, productivity, and quality from your employees, you get teased? Sometimes your employees do well, and then the very next day, they unexpectedly make some avoidable error or do something wrong that they know should not have been done. Isn't that frustrating and discouraging? Here you think that you've hired the best people available. You pay them very well, and sometimes even better than your competition. You give them superior training, and yet, why does it happen? And what do you do when these things happen? Usually you do one of two things. Most owners, when they are faced with employees not living up to their standards, what they do is to point the bony finger. You fire them, you get angry at them, you make them redo their job, you dock their pay, and so forth. This often doesn't work because the problems come back to haunt you. Also, the attitude this causes in your employees, in your workers, shows up when they are out on a call to a customer. The customers feel their anger, which makes you all the more angry. So what have you gained? The second thing many owners do is to get the job done themselves because they feel that unless they, the owners, do it, it'll never get done right. Why does it happen that employees don't live up to your standards? There are many different reasons people usually give, including the idea that workers today are not the same as they used to be. They aren't motivated like they used to be. They are more spoiled than ever. You have to cater to them. You have to be their nursemaid and father figure rolled up into one. However, I think that possibly the one major and main underlying reason for employees not living up to your standards is that they are not functioning like a team, like a winning employee team. Let's assume the best of all possible worlds, and you could find a lot of good people. Why not just hire the best people, and everything else will follow? Well, the problem is that it won't work. You can have the best hiring system, the most talented employees and managers, you can pay them at the highest rates, and you can still have a bad team atmosphere. Employees can make or break a business. My goal is to interest you enough to begin experimenting with some of the ideas we'll be discussing. And for those who already have winning employee teams, my intent is to offer some new tricks of the trade for you to consider. A moment ago, I mentioned how employees can make or break a business. Let's take a look at how employees can do this. Then we'll contrast this picture with what you can expect from winning employee teams. And then we'll spend the majority of the time focusing on how to build and maintain a winning employee team. Let's first take a look at how employees can break a business. Well, they can drag their heels. They can make deliberate mistakes or omissions. They couldn't care less about mistakes. Their loyalty is only to the paycheck. They are sloppy, if not downright hostile to customers. They couldn't care less about their co-workers. Oftentimes, they can steal and lie. They cost a great deal of money to have around. Now let's look at employees who are not that bad. Employees who just maintain the business. They do what they are told, but nothing more. They don't make decisions. They wait for someone else to do it. They don't offer new or creative ideas. Their loyalty is to the job, not to the firm, not to the business. They resist change because change entails disruption. It entails them having to work harder. Their attitude is each one for themselves, and they blame others for their mistakes. In contrast, let's take a look now at the winning employee team and how they appear. Winning employee teams solve problems even before the owners hear about them. The owners don't have to check and recheck their work. The loyalty of these employees is to the success of the firm. They are highly identified with the firm. They accept and welcome change and new ideas. They become the firm's sales force and the firm's biggest boosters. Clearly, they're more efficient. They bring new employees along faster. They are continually improving work procedures. They help each other. The different teams and departments work together very well. They make more money for the business owner because there is less absenteeism and lateness. There are less accidents, less turnover. The odds are by now you're sitting back and wondering, is this for real? Well, let me tell you. In 1985, there was a joint venture created between Toyota and GM. It was called NUMMI, the New United Motor Manufacturing Company. NUMMI reopened a shuttered GM plant in Fremont, California. It was originally shuttered because of poor attendance, low productivity, hostile union problems, a hostile workforce. NUMMI in 1985 hired the same employees. Within 2 years, they were producing high-quality cars, They were making huge gains in productivity. They were exhibiting little absenteeism. And the GM cars that came out of this plant were rated second in customer satisfaction. No other GM car produced by any of the GM plants even came close. GM couldn't transfer these methods to their other plants until just recently, within the last several years. So what is the royal road to building winning employee teams? There are seven steps to building winning employee teams. Number one, winning employee teams require, they need, continual feedback. Number two, you need to know how your employees see you, the business owner, and the firm. Number three, you, the business owner, have to share your vision of the future, your goals, your action programs with your employees. Number four, employees and teams have to be solving the problems that they encounter. And you, the owner, has to see to it that, in fact, they do that and have to provide the necessary training. Number five, employees have to be encouraged to make decisions and to own the responsibility for their decision. The sixth step involves employees choosing other new employees. And number seven, we'll be talking about pay for performance and gain sharing. These seven steps are necessary at the minimum to build winning employee teams. Let's go back over it. Let's look at these seven steps. We're talking about continual feedback. Continual feedback underlies all the other six steps. The more employees know, the less they guess, the more they feel part of the team, the more they feel influential and respected, the more they want to do a good job, and the more they feel you, the business owner, have an interest in their welfare. What kind of information are we talking about? Well, we're talking about your goals, your strategies, action programs you've developed, plans for the future, budgets, your financials, especially financials pertaining to costs and margins. They need information about the customer feedback you receive. They also need to know what happens with suppliers and vendors, with the interchanges that occur between the suppliers and vendors and your firm and the personnel in your firm. They need to know how others do the same kind of work in other industries and in other firms, namely benchmarking. Also, employees need to know how they each see each other and how they are seen by you. And they have to be given a chance to discuss all of the above information among themselves. Once again, then, the more information about the functioning of the firm that is shared openly with employees, the more employees feel they are in on things. The second step in building an employee team, winning employee teams, is that involves you, the business owner, determining how you and the firm are seen. There is always a discrepancy between how I as an individual see things and how others see me and my firm. There will always be that discrepancy. We can only see out of our own eyes. We can't see through anyone else's eyes. We need a mirror that reflects our management style, and how it affects the business. And the only way to get this is by soliciting this information anonymously from our employees. What are some of the dimensions that employees will comment about, will give us information about, will be concerned about? Well, let me talk about the culture and norms of businesses in general, what employees might look at as they consider your business, as you get information from them about your business. For example, they might be asking and wondering about, are you outcome-oriented or blame-oriented? Namely, are you more interested in pointing the bony finger and placing blame, or are you more interested in the results? Secondly, are you more interested in failure, avoiding failure, or are you more interested, more oriented to using failure as a way of gathering more information? Is your point of view that of what you did do as opposed to what you didn't do? Do your employees see you as looking at various and multiple options and viewpoints, or do they see you as rigid, looking at a fixed pie sort of situation? Do they see you tending to avoid risk or going towards creative solutions that might or might not be a bit risky? Do they see you as being oriented towards the past? We used to do things this way, and that's the way we're going to do things. Or towards the present, namely, we got to make money now. Or do they see you oriented towards the future? How will what we have decided today will impact the future? These are only some of the dimensions, some of the norms that employees will think about as you ask them information about your firm, how they see your firm. Let's look at why this culture, these dimensions are so important. In 1961, there was this disastrous invasion of Cuba by a brigade of Cuban exiles. This occurred during the heady days of the Kennedy administration. There was a very highly cohesive policy group under Kennedy. These were the best and the brightest. Unfortunately, the norm of this group was groupthink. Namely, everyone must agree early and be decisive. Here was a group that was very present-oriented. They were always going towards things. They wanted to make a decision right away. They did not want to be seen as not active, not decisive. Another example of how important these norms are. Let's look at the Nixon Watergate scandal. The norm of the group surrounding President Nixon had to do with attacking the enemy. There was always an enemy. The blame was on the enemy. Their attitude was, quote unquote, Nixon is our leader, and he's right no matter what. In other words, disagreement was not tolerated. A differing point of view was not tolerated. If anything went wrong, it was because of the other people outside of our group. Once again, then, the second step to building winning employee teams is for you, the owner, to know how your employees see you, your management style, and the firm. How do you get this information? Well, one way is by interviewing employees, utilizing employee surveys, questionnaires, and so forth. However, even in the best of teams, employees have to be guaranteed confidentiality and no risk in giving information. So anonymous surveys, utilizing outside consultants, is the order of the day. And once you've collected this information, once this information is collated, this information as well has to be shared with all employees so they know what you're thinking about based on their feedback. Let's summarize. The first step to building winning employee teams is continual feedback to the team, providing that feedback to the team. The second step is you, the business owner, determining how you are seen by your employees, not only you, but your firm, how it's organized. The third step involves and entails you sharing your future goals, plans, and vision with your employees. This entails you and your management team developing a plan for the next several years, a plan that includes goals, objectives, action plans, a plan that involves also your vision of the company 5 years, 10 years down the road, a magnet, if you will, that is not cast in stone, but serves as a guiding light, if you will. The next step, once this plan is developed, is to cascade the outlines of it throughout your company, throughout each department, each section, so that each individual in your firm knows what the initial outline of the future is, at least as conceived by the management team. The idea of cascading these plans down through the company is to be able to solicit information, feedback, to encourage group discussions about the plan, so that everyone feels that their voice, their ideas, their thoughts are being heard. All this information needs to be shuttled back up to management so they can revise the plan in accord with how their employees perceive things. Discussions between all the layers of the business has to occur. This is one of the most important steps to ensuring that employees feel identified with and loyal to the firm. If they have made a contribution to the future of the firm, they are to that extent identified, wanting and motivated to increase their productivity, their loyalty, their pride in the firm is enhanced. The fourth step in building winning employee teams involves team problem solving. And an insistence by you, the business owner, that the team or the department solve their own problems and not wait for top brass. I oftentimes talk about how in one firm what I had done was to literally lock a team in a room and tell them they can't come out until they solve the problem that was under discussion. The president of this firm tended to come in and suggest a solution that, of course, was accepted by everyone readily. That's what we're trying to avoid. And that the business owner is really the only one to transmit that message. The message, once again, being you, the employee team, have to take the responsibility to solve problems. You cannot depend on me. You cannot depend on supervisors. However, before employees can accept the full responsibility for problem solving, they need training. Training in problem-solving structures, for example. They need to learn how to specify and concretize problems into a problem statement. They need to know how to establish base rates for when the problem does and does not occur. They need to learn how to state a problem in a positive frame. For example, the idea of reducing, quote-unquote, the number of callbacks is a totally different kind of goal than the aim is, quote-unquote, to produce X number of callbacks per month. One is magnetizing, eliciting. The other one, is the negative statement, is putting the frame in a negative light. It does not serve as a guide. The positive frame does. They also need to learn how to investigate the reasons for the occurrence and non-occurrence of the problem. They need to learn how to state what the obstacles are that need to be overcome. Their training has to involve measurement and monitor procedures. And they also have to learn what continuous improvement is. Continuous improvement in their problem-solving style. Let's continue now. What's the fifth step in building winning employee teams? We were talking a moment ago about how employees need to learn problem-solving techniques. It's the same thing with decision-making, which is the fifth step. That employees have to learn to make decisions and not wait for the top brass to come around. But in order for this to work, there has to be a continual review of decisions made. In order to learn which systems worked, systems of decision-making worked, which didn't. Ground rules have to be negotiated between you, the business owner, and your employees regarding which decisions are to be made by whom. And clearly, in this kind of environment, the role of the supervisor and manager will change. They are no longer the answer man, but instead a leader who sees to it that each employee becomes his own leader. Let's continue with the sixth step. This involves the hiring of new employees. How many out of you listening to this tape would like to have a partner imposed on you? A partner that you have no choice over, that you have no decision-making power over, but he will become a 50% owner in your business. Of course you wouldn't like it. Consider your employees who have other employees foisted on them. Employees they have no control in the selection of. I'm suggesting then that the sixth step in building winning employee teams should involve your employees interviewing, if not choosing, all new hirees, including new managers. A very important element in a team member feeling that they really have a sense of ownership, a pride of ownership in the company. Also, I'd like to suggest very strongly that part of hiring new employees should entail the use of psychological assessments to screen out prospects. The reason for this is not because they are the be-all, psychological steps are the be-all and end-all of employee selection procedures. They offer you another way of looking at your employee staff, another way of considering who is qualified and who isn't. There is a seventh step, and that entails pay for performance and gain sharing. I have seen where gain sharing, compensation related to team performance, allows the team to really feel that sense of ownership. Not only that, but the idea of paying for performance on a team basis means that I, your employee, don't have to worry about my neighbor down the plant who is messing things up for me. He's getting paid the same as I, but yet he's impairing my productivity. Think about what kind of atmosphere that produces in a company where everyone's paid the same based on longevity, for example. I'm suggesting to contribute to the growth of winning employee teams, I am suggesting that pay for performance and gain sharing on a group level, a team basis, a team level, is crucial. These are the seven steps, then, to building winning employee teams. Let me review them for the moment. We're talking about step number one, continual feedback to the team. Step two, you, the business owner, determining how your employees see you, your management style, and the firm, the culture of the firm. Number three, you sharing your vision of the future and your goals, your action programs with your employees and hearing their feedback about your vision. Number four, encouraging, supporting employees and teams solving their own problems. Number five, you, the business owner, supporting and encouraging employees and teams to make business decisions. Number six, how you choose your new employees will affect your employee productivity. I'm suggesting that your employees should have a greater responsibility in that process. And number seven entails pay for performance and gain sharing. Clearly, there are going to be a lot of objections. Let's take a look at them. For example, feedback, giving feedback to your employees. Well, some of the objections include it takes too much time, they're really not interested, my financials are none of their business. Well, it may take too much time if you consider that employee lack of productivity is your norm or your goal. It doesn't take too much time, however, if your goal is, in fact, employee productivity. The objection that you might have about, quote unquote, my financials are none of their business. Well, the fact of the matter is your employees have an idea of how much you're making anyway. And the odds are their estimate of what you're making and what you're pulling out of the business is greater than your actual take home from the business. That's not the important part of the financials anyway, that it is to be shared or should be shared with your employees. We're talking about gross margins. We're talking about nets. We're talking about all the costs involved in building a product or delivering a service so that they, your employees, know how to evaluate and measure their performance. Namely, their productivity. The second step had to do with the mirror of the firm, namely, you determining how your employees see you. Some of the common objections that I've heard go like this, quote unquote, it's my ship. If they don't like it, let them jump overboard. Or, quote unquote, I don't care what they think of me as long as they do their work. Well, ladies and gentlemen, the fact of the matter is that attitude does not produce happy campers. Clearly, it doesn't produce winning employee teams. You have to make a decision. What kind of employee staff do you want? The vision of the future is step number three. And some of the objections include, quote unquote, they don't know enough to make a contribution, and, quote unquote, what if they come up with something I don't like? Well, the fact of the matter is, your employees know much more about the inner workings of your business than you will ever know. You really, for example, don't know the cover-ups employees introduce in order to get the product out. You don't know what their ideas are about making any work process more efficient. You haven't asked them. And what my experience illustrates is that, in fact, employees are the wisest people about what is going on in the firm. Their wisdom comes out only when they're motivated, only when they feel loyal to your firm. The second objection to you sharing your vision and future of the future of the firm is, what if they come up with something I don't like? Well, the fact of the matter is, we're talking about negotiation. We're not talking about dictation. If they do come up with something you don't like, your task is to tell them why you don't like it. Their task is either to counter your arguments or accept it. And rather bluntly, if they can't counter your arguments, if in fact this discussion is going on and your take wins, winning employee teams go along readily without resistance. The fourth step had to do with employee problem solving. Objections include they won't do it, they don't know how to do it, they don't have the perspective that I do. And my reaction to that is, well, provide the perspective. You really don't know what your employees can do about problem solving until you provide them the opportunity. And the same reaction that I just expressed, I could also apply to the fifth step about decision making. The objections include, what if they make the wrong decision? How will my managers feel? Can they change? Will they stay? Well, once more decision making is pushed down to the employee levels at the lowest levels, you'd be pleasantly surprised at how well decisions are handled, made, monitored, measured. Managers and supervisors have to be trained to change their role. They are no longer the know-it-all. Their job now is to make sure, in fact, that employees are problem-solving and are making their own decisions. And they, your supervisors, have to be trained to teach employees those skills. The sixth step had to do with hiring. And you might say, well, employees really don't know what's needed to hire the right person. And again, my reaction is, they know better than you in most instances. Again, that's my experience talking. Pay for performance is the seventh and last step. I've heard owners say, my employees should work hard just to get their pay. And what if the company as a whole doesn't do well? Why should I pay them for their performance? And of course, why should I give up my profits? I'm the one who takes all the chances. I'm the one who has sleepless nights. And again, my comment is that the more workers feel that they are being paid for their performance, the more they feel that they are part of a team that's being paid for excellent performance, the more they will put out for you. That, again, has been what I've seen when there has been winning employee teams. Let's summarize the discussion thus far. If you share information with your employees, they will feel a sense of being on the inside. If you solicit information from them about how they see the firm, they'll feel respected. If they participate in planning for the future of the firm, they will feel an ownership stake in the firm. If employees are encouraged to solve problems, they'll feel pride in their work. If employees are encouraged to make decisions, they're going to feel trusted. If they are involved in the hiring process, they're going to feel a sense of control and influence. And if they are paid for their performance, they will be motivated.
We hope this edition of the Service Contractor's Business Tape of the Month has given you many new ideas to help you run your company more effectively. Along with this month's tape, you also received several other things. There is a short summary of the tape you just heard, a brief outline of the program for quick review, and you will also find a customer response card enclosed. There is a place on the card for your comments on this tape, as well as space for suggestions you would like to make for topics on future tapes. The Service Contractor's Business Tape of the Month is produced and distributed by Grandy & Associates. If we can be of service to you, give us a call on our toll-free line, 1-800-432-7963. Until next month, remember, invest your time and invest your money in those things that will reproduce.